Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello, this is Rich Gasway, host of the Leaders Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I hope you'll join me for Firehouse World, February 28th to March 4th, at the San Diego Convention Center in San Diego, California. While there, I'll be presenting on two topics, fireground command decision-making and situation awareness, and another topic that is commonly talked about on the Leaders Toolbox, understanding motivation. What does it mean, and how to improve it? I hope to see you there. Welcome to the Leaders Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gasaway. I'm in Houston, Texas, actually the Ponderosa Fire Department in Houston, Texas, with Fire Chief Fred Windisch. Fred has been a member of the Ponderosa Fire Department since 1975 and serves as the International Director for the Volunteer and Combination Officers section of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. I had an opportunity to talk with Fred about a presentation that he's going to be doing at the VCOS Symposium in the Sun next week in Clearwater Beach, Florida, on the topic of alternatives to fire department staffing. Fred has done some pretty creative things here in Ponderosa, and he's also brought some lessons that he has contributed to other fire departments around the country as he's taught for the Beyond Helmets and Hoses leadership program for the VCOS. So welcome, Fred, and I know that our listeners are going to be anxious to hear about some ideas for alternatives to fire department staffing.
Thank you, Rich. Glad to be with you today, and I hope everybody's having a great day. The intent of this little discussion is going to talk about volunteer and combination staffing. The word alternatives is simply that. It is a word. You could plug in different words such as creative and so forth, dynamic. But I want to give everyone an overview that this particular model that I'm going to lay out for you is primarily designed for us. It doesn't mean it's wrong for you, right for you, wrong for us, right for us. What it means is we've looked at our mission, which is absolutely the most critical thing, keeping that laser scope on the mission at all times. Sometimes we tend to forget what the mission is. I'll go over quickly what our mission statement is at Ponderosa. And it's pretty simplistic. Some people say it's too long. I don't really care. Here's what ours is. The Ponderosa Fire Department's mission is to be a leading emergency service organization by meeting, keyword, meeting the needs of our community in fire prevention, fire suppression, and rescue using an all-hazards approach. Now, if you think about the words that are used in that mission statement, it's pretty basic stuff, which is what a mission is supposed to be. And leading is a key word. Leading allows us to have a continual improvement process, meeting the needs of the community. We are not a Houston, Texas fire department. We are not a San Antonio, Texas. We are not a fire department in New York. Fire department. We are our own community, and we in the fire service have to remember who our customers are and stay focused on our mission. I'll probably say that over and over again here. Some of the issues that we run into as leaders in our own organizations is that when we get this mission creep, we end up forgetting, are we mission-centric or are we retaining our social methods of running our organization. I don't want to downplay the importance of the social aspects of our organizations because they're ultimately important, because if we have unhappy people, we are not going to have a good service delivery system. So keeping that in mind, you just have to remember the priorities in life here, and mission is number one. Social is absolutely important. Some other issues that when we're talking about staffing, and these are pretty typical, is your department missing responses? Is that okay for you or not? Now, you have to dissect that. None of us want to miss a response, but we certainly don't get too upset if the mattress on the freeway is burning. Okay, we know that's a minor smells and bells, but the point is, if you're missing responses because of staffing, then you better start paying attention. You know, what is your response time? Response time is really in the eyes of the beholder, and I've developed a kind of perspective that I have no idea who has the same perspective, but I always try to put myself in the position of the person calling 911, and that is, I want you there now. You know they do, and we want a fire truck and an ambulance on every corner. That can't happen. And what I try to do is look at the reasonable thing. You know, there's many discussions out there that talk about, you know, emergency responses, non-emergency responses, and you have to weigh those issues for your community. There is no black and white set in stone rule. So you have to look at your response time. Now, with that said, in a volunteer and combination system, you have to start focusing on the reaction time. From dispatch to staffing the vehicles. That's where you have control. You have total control over that. If you have people in your houses, in your firehouses, then you can control it. If they're response from home, then, you know, you have to deal with that. It's all in how much effort you want to place on this response time. There's no fire department in the universe that can be there in 30 seconds all the time. We know that. So your community has to be determine what the applicable response time should be for that particular community. No set in stone.
Fred, you had earlier on used the word or the phrase mission-centric. That might be a term that's a little vague to some of the listeners. What does it mean for an organization to be mission-centric?
Well, in my world, which those of you that know me, I live in a strange world. the mission-centric means never forgetting that mission. Mission, you're constantly revolving. You're constantly revolving around that. That mission. It's the center of your universe. It's, you know, the planets are out there with your SOGs and your people and your business and your maintenance. I mean, you make the list. It's there. And the point is that mission-centric can be easily compared to our own solar system. So and the mission is the sun. I remember a lot from physical science in those early years. Anyway, the reference to social aspects is important. I'll repeat, it's very important. But sometimes we let the social aspect drive the operations of our organization. All I'm trying to get across here is that focus on the mission.
You had... when you talk about mission-centric, it's certainly meaning, as you describe it, to have the focus of the organization front and center. And while it isn't necessarily part of the program, one of the things that came to my mind is maybe an alternative, or not an alternative, but a companion term, individual-centric, is almost the opposite of being mission-centric. What do you see in organizations that are individual-centric? In other words, their focus is maybe more selfish, and how does that cause problems for the organization?
Yeah, Rich, you know, individual-centric is, again, repeating, it's that social aspect. And let's see if I can think of an example here. If you have one of your members come up and say, I don't like the way you're doing this, and I'm going to really pick on something silly. You didn't wait for me when you took the engine to that car fire. And then all of a sudden, a new rule comes out and says, we have to wait 6 minutes for everybody to staff the vehicle, and they have to talk on the radio, or else you can use a web-based system, whatever the issue may be. Too much emphasis on our individuals within the organization versus our product delivery. And it's a balancing act. It's the scales of justice. It's the teeter-totter. You can't put too much emphasis on one side, because then it becomes unbalanced, and your service capabilities, your product, degenerates. So it's a balancing act, and we need to remember to be more focused on our mission. Now, just to expand a little bit on that balance thing, if you are so focused on your mission, you will end up with a full career fire department with 15 persons on an apparatus, and you're going to be out of the house. You're going to have, for your 20 square miles, you're going to have 20 fire stations. I could carry that out to the nth degree. That's when you're focused too much on your mission. So I guess what I'm getting to is, and we're going to talk about it here in a minute, is you got to have a brain, you got to be educated, and you got to put those two together and come up with a balancing act for your community.
Okay. Well, let's move and carry the conversation on to the next level here.
The next level is talking about the various models for staffing. And I know your listeners, Rich, you know, they're very, and there's some smart people out there, but it pays for us to fully understand the various levels that are available. Pure volunteer response from home. All right, that's our basic model for the volunteer fire service. And I got to make a joke, folks. My wife's washing windows in the background, so that's the background noise. It's real life. This is real life podcast. Sorry about the noise in the background besides my voice. So pure volunteer response from home. And then we have volunteer staffing. And that means you are putting X amount of volunteers in your houses, in your firehouses, and they do the preliminary response. And then you have pay-per-call, then you have part-time employees, and you have full-time employees. I guess what I'm advocating here is, what about a combination of all the above? There's a lot of negatives of every particular level there, and that's five levels. I'll repeat them again for you. Pure volunteer response from home. Pure in my world means they aren't getting paid for anything. They're pure volunteers. Volunteer staffing, which can be pure volunteers. You can get staffing hours. We'll get into FLSA in a minute. And then pay per call, which a lot of you are familiar with, part-time employees, our hourly paid employees, and then full-time, of course, are your shift workers, your firefighters. So if we put a combination of those together, we are developing a creative staffing alternative for our own community that is affordable. So when we talk about doing this, we have to have a system in place, a process evaluation model, whatever you guys want to call it. And I'm going to throw some words out to you, strategic planning, goals, making change, forward plan, improvement over time, what is good enough, standards. I won't get into my opinion on standards right now. But the hint here is, call it what you want. If strategic planning scares the pants off you, don't use the word. If making change scares you, don't use the phrase. If you want to talk about improvement over time, there's your strategic plan. Pick up your own word and use it that will benefit you. Transitioning is not easy. You have a lot of internal pressures as well as external. Your current bylaws, you know, this is another one of the hot topics. So many volunteer combination systems in our country have outmoded bylaws. We could do an hour talk just on bylaws. And by the way, before I get any further and you all fall asleep, go to our website, www.ponderosavfd.org. Our entire SOGs, policies, bylaws, yak are available for free on our website. We put a considerable amount of work into it. We believe in mutual aid for everybody, so therefore it's available to you. But anyway, if your current bylaws are out of focus for the current day, you need to get on them, because that's the foundation of your universe, of your solar system. And so you need to, you know, get that foundation as solid as you can. Transitioning creates culture shock. For instance, you're just trying to get rid of the volunteers. No, we aren't. We're trying to make a better response system. Scheduling is an issue. It's not easy to schedule people. People are busy. It's a challenge. However, there's products on the market. And I'm not plugging this company, but we do use it. It's whentowork.com. Very flexible, web-based, self-managed. It's really and it's inexpensive. I think it's $400 a year. And it's a great thing for scheduling our people. And let me give you a hint. We have full-time, we have part-time, and we have volunteers. So you know where I'm going with this. You know, member commitments, you have to evaluate. You can't demand your members are going to staff, and I'm picking numbers here, four nights a month. You might be able to, but you can't come out and pass the rule that says if you're going to be a member here, you have to staff four times a month. You're going to get yourself in trouble. You have to consider the impact on your existing membership if you move toward volunteer staffing. Everything is going to cost you money. Money is at a premium today. We know that. We still don't know the effects, what's going to happen next year and the year after. Right now, we're probably we're still going up the crest of the wave in the impact of this economic stuff. And so we'll see what happens in the next couple of years. But when you make the decision to go pay-per-call or incentive programs or whatever, once you do start it, you can't take it back. Because if you do, you won't be chief anymore. That's life. Leading change is difficult. I'll get into some examples here. And change does not happen overnight. Overnight is not an option. I can tell you that we started voluntary staffing at our headquarters in the third quarter of 2004. It took us about 2.5 years to get that thing really where it's about 90% effective, because we balanced the need of our members, there's that word balance again, and we balanced the need with our mission. So it takes a while. Don't expect change to occur overnight. Educate yourself. There's so much stuff out there, and I'm going to list a couple for you. The Volunteer and Combination Officer section, and by the way, we're going through some website changes, so this may take a little bit, but vcos.org, there's the Red Ribbon Report that is specific about combination department transitions. The White Ribbon Report is about how to manage and run your agency. The Fair Labor Standards Act guidance book that the IAFC has, and by the way, that thing is probably not going to be for sale any longer. I don't know the exact time. We may be even giving them out at the symposium next week. That book is important because you can get yourself in trouble real quick. And then I happen to know these two authors named Fred and Fred. Fred Crosby and Fred Windisch wrote this Jones and Bartlett book called A Leadership Guide for Combination Fire Departments. It's not a blueprint. It is a roadmap. And for that analogy, a roadmap is getting from Houston to Chicago, but boy, you can go via New York, you can go via Washington State, but you'll eventually get to Chicago. And that's the intent of that book. It is available at Jones and Bartlett Publishing. Use your own resources when you're designing your plan. You know, you have trusted friends. You got some old heads that you've hung out with for decades in your own agencies. You've got and your neighbors and, you know, your mentors in the emergency response world. These are special people, and you need to use their opinions. They aren't all right, and they aren't all wrong. You have to use your brain and use it. Mutual aid. In this case, mutual aid is, hey, call us. We're there to help you. We actually call it mutual aid with the VCOS when people ask us how to do things. Repeating again, remain focused on the mission, educate and engage your command staff. They've got to be a part of this. If you go out and do this on your own, you will lose. Trust me. Communicate with your members. Communicate, communicate, communicate. You say it three times, you're supposed to remember that. And communicate with your elected boards, leaders, whatever you have in your organizations. I think overall you need to remember you are not alone in this quest. If you lay out a specific want or need with some backup that has some thought and planning to it, you will get the support And if you recognize, like any change model, if you recognize there will be adjustments along the way and, hey, maybe even a total direction change, that's okay. We are not talking about your personal ego. We're talking about what? Say it after me. Mission.
You know, Fred, you talk about the reaching out to people. I want to put a plug in for the VCOS because there's a group of people who are I would say, among the list of leaders of fire departments and volunteer and combination officer departments. And periodically, people will write into on the VCOS website and click a link and send in a question that they're having a particular problem and they need some help with. And somebody at the IFC will forward that question out to a list of fire service leaders. I know I've received on occasion questions that relate to the kind of things that are, you know, my department does or that I speak to. And then this person gets the benefit of getting feedback from 15 or 20 different fire service leaders that can help them either solve their problem or give them direction to where they can go to get some more help to get the problem solved. So the VCOS is a wonderful resource for helping you when you're having a challenge, whether it's staffing or something else, to be able to reach out to 20 different leaders that you might not know or might not know how to access. But these people are willing to share with you some good ideas and some advice to help your solve your problem or help your department grow.
Yeah, Rich, there's no doubt about it. And I would like to add a little bit of background on you know, the culture of the VCOS. And culture is the big word today, you know, when you talk about safety and so forth. But culture in the VCOS, and those of you that are listening out there, I think you'll connect here in a moment. Do you remember when you knocked on doors for money? Do you remember when you had to fight for your own bunker gear and find a helmet that might fit and gloves? Do you remember your red gloves? I'm really talking to the old guys now. But do you remember only two air packs in cases on your one fire engine? If you remember those types of things and struggling and maybe, you know, I'll give you a little example. And this is pretty late, in 1976, we split, Ponderosa split from the Spring Fire Department. And we're still great friends. It's just one of those things that happened with growth. And our budget then was $22,000. Next year it'll be $2 million. So put that in perspective. But anyway, $22,000. And I remember going to Chief Herb Doran. He was our first chief. And in fact, we've only had three chiefs, folks. And I said, Herb, my wife works for Sears, and I was a mechanic back then. And I said, we need some tools. We don't have socket sets or anything. And I've got tools at home, but it's a pain to bring them up every time I have to work on something. And I get 10% discount if I tell them it's for me. And the chief looked at me and he says, well, okay, here's $94. Go buy as many tools as you can. So the impact of that story is to let you know that the volunteer blood runs thick in the VCOS. And with that said, yeah, I'm paid for this job now, and you know, my life has been good, and so has Tim Walls, and you know, and so has Rich Gassaway's and John Buckman's, and I could go on and on. But we have such a coursing of volunteer blood in our veins that we don't forget our roots, and that's something that's another leadership story for you. But I just wanted to make that point.
Sure, thank you.
You know, getting back to this podcast, and we have so many things against us today when you're trying to add staffing, and I've developed this little concept called the rails that do not meet. And think about a railroad track. There's three major rails out there in this case. One is workers' compensation insurance. One is Department of Labor. Hello. And the next is the Internal Revenue Service. So when you look at those three, I'll call them agencies, they really don't have cross tracks. They don't come together. They're continuous, contiguous. They run down the rails forever. And I'll give you quick examples. Workers' compensation for volunteers is real easy. If you make no pennies workers' compensation, you fall into this group. If you start pay-per-call and then you start an incentive program, guess what? Then the Internal Revenue Service gets involved because the old 1099 opinion that we used to have, that means if they make less than $599 a year, less than $600, therefore you get a 1099. Not true, because they are considered employees. Employees because they work for one organization. This is another one-hour podcast, but and I'm going to gloss over it. And then we have our Department of Labor. So when we look at the Department of Labor, the Internal Revenue Service, and workers' comp, these rails aren't meeting because one defines employee something else. One defines a volunteer as something else. And it's a continuous haggle and hassle to try and get these things lined up. So when you start making these payments, you've got to be educated. And the first thing is with that FLSA document the IFC has produced. We need to move on here. You know, we'll go over these staffing models. No dollars means pure volunteer staffing. We have various methods from within. You got home response, they can go to the station, and then they can go to the scene. Oh my goodness, did Fred say to the scene? Yeah, he did. We use that model. We have a very stringent process for using lights and sirens, and we manage it. Some departments don't like to manage things. And don't you love that emphasis? And by the way, let me throw in my usual joke, and that is you got to put the emphasis on the right syllable. And so anyway, I'm okay. It's the rest of the world. Anyway, you know, responding to the scene is not all bad because remember what our mission is. We need to get people there. You know, you can't forget you got to get apparatus there too. You don't want everybody going to the scene, so you have to manage it. And your states have different laws and all that. And you've got to determine it. You got to use your brain. You can do duty shifts. You could have, you know, years ago, Ponderosa had duty section 1, 2, and 3. And we would rotate by the tones in our pager, and dispatch would just rotate 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And it would be 3, 2 sometimes if it was something greater. And then all call, if you remember those words. And so we had duty shifts with the pure volunteer, and it worked very, very well for us. So you can have any combination of the above, remembering that it's all about you. It's all about your community. When you spend some dollars, then you can start combining more. You have pure volunteer response from home. You can have pay-per-call. And now the question is, how much you gonna give them? I don't know. I know of some that give $20. Some give $20 per hour, but you better watch yourselves because you're messing with Department of Labor rules. So you got to be careful. And you can have shifts. You can have time blocks. The big key is make sure before you do this that you are Fair Labor Standards compliant. Because if and when they come back to search for you, there's no FLSA police, but it takes one complaint to activate that police. And you could be, you know, you could end up in some legal problems, and you're going to have to pay back wages and all kinds of stuff. Besides the lawyers, they're real expensive today, folks. Anyway, pay-per-call, go back to that. How much? I'll tell you, our guys get $3.35 a run. All right, are you ready for that? $3.35. That wasn't $335 a run. And, you know, but there's other things associated. This gets into another hour presentation of benefits. Benefits, and what's the other word I'm looking for, Rich? We'll move on. There's tangibles, intangibles, those types of things. And so you have to look at your total incentive package before you just pick a dollar amount. Because no matter how much the dollar amount is, it's not going to be enough. Just remember that. It's not going to be enough. It's just like us and our other jobs before we became full-time fire chiefs. My raise wasn't big enough. Ha, ha, ha. So there you have it. So then we get into combination staffing, which is more dollars. And we're building on this as we've been going along. Part-time employees. These would be hourly. Watch yourself with fair labor standards. You can't pay your volunteers hourly wages, I'm telling you right now. And if you're doing it, you better watch out. Start small. I can tell you that in 1986 or 87, we paid one guy for 4 hours a day, 3 days a week, to do little things around the fire station. Inspect the trucks, the air packs, sweep the floor, you know, all those happy things we do. But generally, and I think it was $4 an hour we were paying then. I still have the records on somewhere. But that's how we started. And then we increased the hours, and then we added a second person. And now we have, and we get ready for this now, 5 hourly firefighters on duty from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday. Now, a couple come in at 7, one at 8, one at 9, and one at 11. And then they drop off after 8 hours. And then we have our 2 full-time career staff. So, we have full-timers also. So, they're there. And then we have volunteer staffing. Well, first of all, daytime, weekdays, it's people just hang out because they want to make their runs. That's why they joined in the first place. And then as we move into nights, we start volunteer staffing. The time block is from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., knowing that that is a time block. And by the way, they get $40 for that time block. And they stay at the station. We max it out at 4. There's been nights we've had 10 there, and they just don't care about the money. They just want to make the runs, especially Friday and Saturday nights, busy in our area. So the point is that you can have any type of dynamic staffing model, whatever works for you. On weekends, we have 2 volunteers staffing during the day on Saturday and Sunday, and 2 a combination of either hourly or highly qualified volunteers that work a time block that's FLSA compliant. And I think they get, I think it's $65 for a nine-hour day. It could be $70. It escapes me now. So, but it is FLSA compliant. Now, the key to this whole thing, what's my driving force? It's to get that first engine out immediately. It takes care of all the smells and bells so that our volunteers don't have to be bothered for the automatic alarms, the motor vehicle incident. I'll use the word washdown. Those types of incidents that require minimal commitment of people power and a one engine response, okay? So that's our goal in our community fire department. So we are meeting that goal, and we're doing it quite well. And then we supplement the rest of the response with our other volunteers and mutual aid. No, excuse me, let me start it with automatic aid. We have a very extensive automatic aid system, and it really works very, very well. A note of caution, you need to have qualified people. Once you start paying people, you get into a different world, and that the qualified person is an ultimate responsibility, and it's ultimately important. You can't just hire the good old boy because he's been there for a while, okay? They've got to have certifications because now you are paying them as firefighters. And for those of you that deal with the two-hatter issues, sorry about that, but we don't have that problem in Texas. of course, I've already talked about full-time employees. You have to determine, do you just need drivers? If you just need drivers, it's a pretty simplistic staffing problem. Start paying them hourly, get full-time, whatever it takes. Do look at Safer Grant. We just got a Safer Grant for 3 more full-time, and they will be, we're in the hiring process now, and the Safer Grant takes effect November 24th of 2009.
Be it
how many people be listening to this,
how many apparatus per run,
whatever. There's got to be a metric to where you measure and what you're doing. Here's our measurement for success, and it's a look back in time on something that somebody pointed out to me that they thought it was important that I put it in this presentation. In 1990, I had the opportunity, myself and the Assistant Chief Jeff Dorn went to the National Fire Academy master planning course for the Volunteer Incentive Program. And let me repeat that, the Volunteer Incentive Program. And there's an equal sign after that that says free. People, you need to take advantage of that. It's a week out of your life, but it's fabulous. Anyway, in 1990, we took the master planning course. It impacted us so much at that time that we hired one of the instructors, Bill Miller, who has passed away since then, and he created a forward plan for us. It wasn't called a master plan. We didn't like the word, as I said at the beginning of this. And that set the pace for our organization for at least a decade, maybe more, because we had something. We had that roadmap. It was almost a blueprint, in fact. And then in 2005, and remember, 1991 to 2005, and we're making continual improvement. We are growing. But we had the culture. That's the big thing. We had the culture of change instilled. We were mission-centric. You know, our solar system was our solar system, and we were doing things. In 2005, we actually did a strategic planning process. Ken Farmer, my good friend who works now at the National Fire Academy, we hired him to come in very inexpensively. Oops, sorry, Ken. Anyway, we hired him. He came in. We did a day with our boards of directors, our stakeholders, our communications center, some mutual aid district chiefs and fire chiefs. The strategic plan included finances, taxes, politics, staffing, response, demographic change, legal issues, and social issues. We laid it all out there for our strategic plan, and it was pretty cool. I got to watch this thing develop. And so I think the key to all this is that we have been continuously active and realistic. That is what we need to get across to you. Be realistic, be timely, and don't hide your head in the sand. I want to thank you for listening this long. It's absolutely a great honor of my life to hang around with great people like Rich Gasway and the John Buckmans. I could go on, and the Ken Farmers. I could go on with a list that would make you bore you more than you are now. But it really is an opportunity, and we have a tremendous mutual aid system. Please ask. Thank you.
Thanks, Fred. The topic was alternatives to fire department staffing. It's going to be presented at the VCOS symposium in Clearwater Beach, Florida. This month now, we're in November, it'll be just next weekend. We're going to put some links on the bottom of the player page of things that Fred had mentioned during the podcast. We'll put a link to the Ponderosa Fire Department website, a link to the VCOS website, Jones and Bartlett Publishing, and then a link to the National Fire Academy so you can learn more about the VIP program that Fred had spoken about. And maybe I might even be able to squeeze out of Fred a copy of his 2005 strategic plan. If it doesn't contain private and confidential information, we could put a link to a strategic plan to give departments an idea of what it is like to look forward into the future and to help lay out the plans for your department as you prepare for the things to come in this tough economy and the recovery from this tough economy. Leaders Toolbox on firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gasway, with Fred Windisch. If you have feedback, you can send that to podcasts@firehouse.com. That's podcasts@firehouse.com.